like a demon.
That was brownish, gray, and white.
A righteous soul temporarily possesses a body.
The Dybbuk box.
This evil thing.
Touché, sir.
The Rougarou.
It has potential to be dangerous.
The Wild Hunt.
There's something large crawling out of the water.
That's just between me and the feds.
Baba Yaga.
I'm Todd.
I'm Jamie.
And I'm Bill.
Welcome to Stranger Happenings Podcast.
It's weird. It just skipped from 6 to 2 to 1 to 0. Clearly
it doesn't know how to count. The machines are dumbing down.
How you
What's
doing?
Up, you guys? I've been drinking tea all day to keep my gizzard wet.
Your what wet?
His gizzard.
My gizzard.
You don't know what a gizzard is? Yes. Well, no. When you're from
part of a chicken, no humans.
When you're from Appalachia, you have a gizzard.
Your parents have them.
Yeah, but I thought you guys were also human too.
I have a cloaca.
Is it bright red and bulbous?
On certain days, yes.
The one time I start out normal, they do not. It's about balance in life, ladies and gentlemen. Can't be an excess like comas.
Before we go too far, I quickly need to tell an adorable story about Bill. Did you know that at one time...
I'm going to kill my sister.
Bill liked a girl so much that he saw sunflowers and the side of a business.
No.
And Sarah convinced him to pick some for her. And he gave them to her. And there were spiders in them. The upside to this story is apparently this girl is a bitch. And we will be rating this episode as mature for me saying the B word.
Oh my God, Sarah. That's two X's brought up in a row in two episodes. Oh, I'm going to get my sister Sarah back.
I do too.
I love it. Huge shout out to Bill's sister Sarah. Thank you.
It really is.
Oh my God. I hate my stroke. Oh, I'm gonna kill.
Anyways,
time
Todd.
To tell the kids Santa Claus isn't real.
Oh, it's not their fault.
I drop nukes. What can I say?
Well,
so what's
Todd,
up, guys?
So today we're talking about time slips, sometimes also called time anomalies or temporal distortions. Essentially, it is the loss of time. This can be going forwards, backwards, or any other way you can measure time.
They can happen individually, or there are reports of them happening to groups of people.
Right. Sometimes they are associated with other paranormal activities, such as hauntings or alien abductions. But not always. Sometimes it's just kind of a standalone event.
Yeah. And there's been many, many stories of time slips throughout history. A lot of them more modern, especially it seems like post-1960s from what I found. Most, but not all of them posted.
Yeah, that's what I saw too.
And some of these stories all seem to be in the same areas of the world, like literally sometimes down to the same blocks on a street, or at least the same cities and countries.
And you'll see
I haven't found many American time slips.
Well,
I haven't.
Me and Jamie might have a little something
you
for you.
You also have a cloaca.
So but we'll get to that later. Touche. So I'm going to start us off with one of the most famous, or maybe I should say infamous, time slip stories that comes out of Liverpool, England. I also just want to say real quick that I noticed a lot of the stories I found come out of England. Not all, but a lot. So I thought that was interesting.
90% of the ones I found were out of the United Kingdom. And out of that 90%,
yeah,
still another 90% of those ones came from the same street.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes.
See.
Yes. So this one takes place on Bold Street in Liverpool, England. And like I said, it's one of the most famous or better known, at least, accounts. So Frank and his wife were out for a stroll in Liverpool town center in 1996. His wife decided that she wanted to go and buy a book at Waterstones, the large bookstore, and they started to walk towards the area of that shop. As they approached Bold Street, Frank decided to go to another shop first, but bumped into his friend and stopped to chat in the street. His wife went on ahead without him. A few moments later, Frank said goodbye, visited his shop, and turned to go back to meet his wife. After reaching Bold Street, he headed on towards the bookstore. As he approached, he glanced up and was surprised to see the name Cripps above the door. As he was about to cross over to see what was going on, a van swept past him with the name Cardens on the side. The van honked its old-fashioned horn and drove past. Looking around, Frank suddenly realized that things were not quite what they should be. He looked at the cars driving past and realized that they were all old-fashioned vehicles, such as you would see back in the 50s and 60s. Then he noticed the people. Men were wearing hats and macs. I'm not sure what a mac is. And the women were dressed in headscarves, full skirts, and had old-fashioned hairstyles, such as women wore just after the war. By this time, Frank was beginning to feel slightly freaked out. He carried on, crossing the road, and headed towards the store. As he got closer, he noticed in the window there were handbags, shoes, and umbrellas. Suddenly, he saw a young woman looking up at the shop sign. She looked confused. She was wearing modern clothes, and as she saw him approaching, she smiled at him. Frank went into the shop, closely followed by the young woman. When they entered, he was surprised and pleased to see that it had indeed turned back into a bookshop. The young woman smiled, shook her head, and said, "That was strange. I thought it was a new clothes shop." Then she walked away, looking extremely puzzled. And then it says Frank was, in fact, a former police officer who was used to dealing in facts and paying attention to his surroundings. He was definitely not the type of person who would believe in the paranormal. Frank never stopped talking about it. Was this a time slip? Evidently, Cripps was a women's shop that sold clothes and other goods decades before. And Cardens was also a well-known Liverpool firm that owned vans around the same time period. So that's the end of that story. There were some other accounts I found that happened on Bold Street. But that's, like I said, that's the most famous or at least the most well-known account.
I agree. It's probably one of the most well-known time slip accounts. Though this is, Bold Street is the street where there's so many of these with specific theories of what causes a time slip just on that street alone. Did you see those? They think the time slip could be caused by the underground railway system causing some sort of magnetic interference with the entire universe.
Interesting.
Causing the time slip.
Yeah, which...
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I guess that's as good as any other theory, right? I mean...
Some of these seem possible. I hate to be that guy. This is one of the ones... different sites, there's too much variation on this one. Frank's a cop. Frank's an off-duty cop. Frank's a retired cop.
Yeah,
but we know their names. Yeah. We don't know if he's retired or not. You think you know that for sure? We don't know the last name. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it so much. How did no one know his last name by now? We live in a world where people can make the connections in modern times. The small stuff like that make me think.
Yeah. Another thing I noticed is the very end of the story, it says Frank never stopped talking about it, but you can never find an actual account of Frank talking about it. You know? Well, so, the story I'm not sure about that.
A book by an author named Tom Sleeman, who writes books about haunted Liverpool and other stuff about Liverpool. And it's funny because according to Tom Sleeman, Tom never talked about it to anyone else but him. Same with Carol. So you said that stuck out to me because in the version that I have in front of me, Frank and Carol never told anyone else besides him about it.
Yeah.
I've seen so many different versions of this particular story that often when I was doing the time slips, I had actually closed page after page because I kept getting the same story again and again. Because this one is so common.
Yeah.
It is. It's very easily found. It's
not overall on time slips, but this one in particular. I kind of give it a thumbs down on plausibility. What about you guys?
Yeah,
I'm going to say the same.
Because, it seems like it's... I like when someone has particulars, like the names of the places. But it's like you have the names of all these places even back in the 60s, but you don't have the last name of the two people this happened to who might still be alive who could explain it better than you. Jamie, do you have one you want to read?
Yeah, I do. And this one I thought was really interesting. This is one thing that I think is interesting with time slips is like you have all these well-known stories that I question because I'm with you. Like there's not enough, you know, the details don't add up across accounts. But then, you know, I've had my own strange experience and I know it happened even though I sometimes wish it hadn't because I'm still like a little weirded out by it, but I just, it's interesting. This one is interesting for me. Anyways, I am going to tell the story of a vanishing hotel in France, in 1979. And this is the only account I found of this one. I didn't really see it anywhere else. I am not really sure the source of it, but we'll see. Anyways, 1979, two couples driving through France, Jeff and Pauline Simpson and Lynn and Cynthia Gisby, looking for a place to stay near Montélimar. They found a motel, but were told there were no vacancies and that they should try further down the road. So off they went and found themselves driving down a cobbled street. They paused to take interest in an oddly old-fashioned sign for a circus, and then they came across a long, low stone building that happened to be an inn. They went inside, were shown to their rooms. The windows had no glass in them. They were just simple wooden shutters over them. The furniture was basic. There were no pillows, no telephones, nothing modern, no lifts. And for dinner served in the inn, they had a meal of steak, eggs, and beer. They went to bed, and at breakfast in the dining room the next morning, they were struck by some bizarrely dressed individuals. A woman in a silk evening gown came in carrying a dog, to which Pauline said, "It was strange. It looked like she had just come in from a ball, but it was 7 a.m. I could not take my eyes off her." They also spied policemen wearing odd uniforms that were later identified to date from around 1905. Those policemen came in and sat down to eat as well. Later, paying their bill, the couples were astonished when they were asked for just 19 francs, or just over £2, to cover their stay. And 2 weeks down the line, on their way home from their holiday, they decided to stay at the hotel again, but they could not find it. And when they developed their rolls of film from their trip that they snapped from their camera, all the negatives of the photos they'd taken at the hotel were missing. Baffled, they returned 4 years later again to try and locate the hotel, which they never found again. So, yeah.
Very interesting.
Guess what?
What?
I found Jeff's Facebook.
Oh.
I believe I have. He's an older gentleman in the United Kingdom, which is supposedly he was from Dover, England.
Makes sense.
Oh, no. This looks like it's his son.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I was kind of curious. It's sort of...
1979, yeah.
Yeah. It could go either way.
I was just curious because I like to look up these people when we know names.
Yeah, just to see if you can actually find a trace of them.
Yes. See, though, this one, I like the fact we have the last names. We have where they're from. There's one thing that didn't sit right with me. Can you guys guess what it is?
The money.
I have no idea.
Yes. If you had me money with a future date on it, you best be sure I'm going to be like, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
That, I would assume it's fake.
Wondered about that as well.
That's the one thing that kind of throws me.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I've got a strange call to next to me, and I have no idea what it goes to. Oh. I like that story a lot, though.
Me too. It was interesting.
Curious about it.
Yeah, same. I don't know. Same. I found that one at least more credible.
Maybe the money thing. You know? I don't know. Maybe they weren't paying attention, or maybe this isn't the first time something strange has happened, like a time slip there, so they're used to strange stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to give it the benefit of the doubt on this one.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
I got one off of Reddit, off the time slip group, by Kayak1969P, titled My Weird Experience Possible Time Slip.
Mm.
It goes, me and my good friend Alan have a weird experience to share with you guys and gals. We go on a fishing trip to Parks Road Farm Fisheries in Meals, once again, United Kingdom. We agreed it was a good day and time to come home. It was about 5:15 p.m. when we set off. We were chatting, and all of a sudden, it went pitch black. It was sunny one moment before. It was sunny one moment, bright daylight, pitch black, and all the cars were flashing their headlights at me. I realized my car's lights went on, so I switched them on. Me and Alan were both shocked to find all of a sudden it was past 7 p.m. We had both lost about 2 hours, and we have no recollection of anything happening within that time. We were only driving for 5 minutes, so I had called the wife at 5:15 to let her know we were on our way home, and it should take 20 minutes. I'm sorry. It should have taken 20 minutes. It took well over an hour to get home. She said she had cooked my tea and had gone cold. We went to the Mio's train station bridge in black. Next thing we know, once again, they woke up, people flashing lights at them, and they needed to turn their lights on. He goes, it was by the Tesco roundabout at Morton Cross. We were in traffic at the time this happened, rush hour traffic. Neither of them can account for the loss of time or if they would have went and gone while there was no accident. That freaked them out. Anyone have any ideas? Well, he wasn't even calling it a time slip as much as, do you know what could have happened to him? And he says he's a teetotaler, which meant he does not drink alcohol at all. He just drinks soft drinks. Now, he posts this in 2020. He said it happened in 2018. And he still checks on the post every so often. In fact, he's swimming out his mother's grave 63 days ago that this happened to him. And because people were making fun of him. And he responded to multiple people 63 days ago how this really happened to him. He can't explain it. He's not given any explanation for why it happened to call it a time slip. He's asking people, actually, if they have any idea what could have caused this. I think it's kind of odd. He doesn't give, like, once again, he doesn't give the last names, which I don't like. But he does give the years. He gives the time. He gives intersections. I do like all that detail.
I get why he doesn't give his last name, though, because people have been making fun of him.
Because it's right going on now.
Doesn't want people to bother him, you know?
Yes, and people all giving him harassment on this one.
Yeah.
But I thought that was interesting, because once again, it was United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's always United Kingdom. Not always.
Yeah, it's not always.
But if I had a bet on the stories.
that was really good, I though. I like that.
That's from Oklahoma, actually.
Go ahead.
But it's not a case.
Something.
Yeah, unless, Todd, do you have something?
I mean, I did have a second one, but you can go ahead.
I will say this one is also from the 70s, but it is in Oklahoma, and it's not lost time like that one. It's, you know, seeing something again. In 1971, two gentlemen were in a pickup truck. Three gentlemen were in a pickup truck. No last names, but Carl, Mark, and Gordon, interestingly enough. They were driving through a cattle pasture near Ponca City, Oklahoma. They had stopped at a gate. They were sent up there to pick up a feeder. Carl said, we opened the gate, which was barbed wire with no lock, and entered. We went on the property, which was covered with grass, up to and over the hood of the truck. That is odd. They drove their pickup through the grass to the feeder and got out. We realized the tank was almost half full and too heavy to load, so we decided to leave and drove around a red barn where we saw a large two-story white house with no lights in front of us. No lights on, I'm guessing. They went back to their employer and explained, and their boss said he drained the tank so they could pick it up the next day. We went to the location to retrieve the tank the next evening, Carl said, and this time we decided to go through the old big white house on the hill and brought our shotguns. Okay. And what they saw was incomprehensible. The house was no longer there, Carl said. We walked up the hill where it stood. There were no signs of demolition, no foundation, nothing at all. What we all seemed to witness the night before was no longer there. We have talked to each other over the years, but none of us have been able to explain the vision. I don't know about that one. Too many froggy details, and I'm with you, no last names, and I don't know why they felt the need to take their shotguns back when it was just an abandoned house the day before, you know?
Yeah, some of these ones just seem too much like someone just wants to tell a story.
Yeah. Yes. Here's my weird story.
Oh, I just thought of one I used to love. Ironically, the United Kingdom. I'm going to try to find while you guys talk. About a time slip involving a fighter pilot.
Interesting.
Oh, cool. All right, well, I'll go ahead and tell my second one. All right, so in this account, we head back over to England. a woman named Angela from Penrith of Cumbria in England reported a strange experience as she walked on a steep path between pine trees up to the top of Beacon Hill that overlooks Penrith. At the time, she was a teenager. Angela would often climb the beacon when she wasn't at school, and it's still a popular local walk. One hot day in August in the mid-1970s, Angela and a friend set out onto the footpath from Beacon Edge. The walk takes about 15 minutes, and the path has many abrupt angles as it zigzags through the trees. The trees crowd thickly around the tracks as it climbs over craggy sandstone outcrops. Soon you feel quite apart from the everyday world. It's an odd feeling, and you can have the impression that someone is watching you from the woods on either side. You go up and up, changing direction and losing sight of the path below and behind you. As Angela and her friend climbed that day, they chatted away, but Angela reports how the atmosphere grew increasingly heavy, as if there were a thunderstorm on its way. They'd walked up many times and weren't taking much notice of their surroundings until they turned a corner and stopped. They both saw it, an old-fashioned cottage, roughly made of stone. Angela says that it was like a dwelling from the Middle Ages. The trouble was there had never been a cottage there before. Smoke was coming from the chimney, so someone was at home. Angela says that there was a very uncanny feeling about the place. She looked at her friend, and as the door began to open, they both fled. When she worked up the courage to climb the hill some months later, the cottage wasn't there, and her friend would never talk about the experience afterwards. And that's all that's to that one. So it's kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
I like it.
I don't know. Again, it's like, you know, it's missing some, you know, important detail, but it does give, you know, some pretty good place names. And like, I don't know, here where I live here in West Virginia, you know, it's hill country, and I can attest to that feeling of climbing a path up a hill, zigzags, because that's pretty much all of our paths are going to zigzag up the hill. And you know, that just kind of weird, ominous feeling that can happen when you're traveling up a path like that in the wilderness. And it is easy to find a place where you can kind of leave civilization behind, even though it's, you know, just right there, and quickly, very quickly feel like you are just in the wilderness. So I don't know. That one spoke to me a little bit. I enjoyed it. Not sure.
I liked it, but
not sure how I feel on that. Like, but I enjoyed it. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
I will say. Ones, you guys are.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I just wanted to say that.
No, you.
Some of my like favorite ones, and I think maybe the ones I come the closest to believing regularly, and maybe I shouldn't, but mostly it's because, like, let me preface by saying this. The reason why I think they could be quote unquote real, I don't necessarily think someone's actually traveling back to that time.
I think it's more that they are tuning in to memory or energy of that place is when people catch like a peep into the past in like historical places. And like, I believe there's stories of that at like Gettysburg. I know there's been one, I know there's been some, in Egypt. I know of a specific one at Temple of Karnak in Luxor. This woman was there. She was totally alone. So, you know, it's quiet. You're not dealing with all the craziness of other people. It was during a time of some social unrest in Egypt. And she was looking at this goddess statue. And she, as she stepped closer, she suddenly felt disoriented. And the statue looked shiny and new. And she heard noise like a crowd from outside. I noticed my partner was speaking to me, but his voice was muffled, and then it suddenly just dissipated. And so I think like stuff like that is really interesting to me, and I think I maybe come close to believing them. I don't know, but I know there's lots of similar ones in like very historic parts of Britain, of course. And I think I've heard some like around Egypt and in other parts of the Middle East, and you know.
Yeah, definitely. I'm with you. So that kind of falls into like the stone tape theory with certain types of hauntings where they just kind of replay over and over and over. And the idea is that, like you were saying, you know, like that, that memory has just kind of implanted itself into, you know, the local geography, and it just keeps replaying over and over and over again throughout time. And I personally, I'm a believer.
Same.
And I'm fascinated with it. I think it's amazing.
Yes.
I would, yeah.
Because actually, I just remembered this. I have kind of had a similar experience to that when I was younger with my mom.
Karnak?
No, not at Karnak. It was in a historical house, though, in the area. But it was really odd because it was just the two of us. And we, like, walked in and... I'm trying to remember if I like actually felt like I was actually seeing it or if it was like a thought I had. And it was like we walked in and I could like clearly see, I guess it's more like a thought, two women also walking in and like dressed from around the era that the house was most used. And they were like shaking off their umbrellas and taking off their coats. And then the tour guide walked in and I kind of lost it, like what I was seeing. And the odd thing was he started talking about like right where they were, was saying like, oh yeah, this was like a coat room area. They would put their umbrellas and stuff here and their coats would hang here. And that was like exactly what I saw before he came in the room, and I thought that was kind of odd. Yeah. But yeah,
that's awesome.
And that house is interesting because like a lot of people talk about the owner of it because she had it built by a certain famous architect, and it, you know, it's a historical site, and she had like a Frank lot Lloyd of,
Wright?
Yeah, it was a Frank Lloyd Wright house. She
such a nerd.
She was a like a philanthropist and she loved children. She had lots of kids in the house, not her own, but kids that she would invite in and tutor and take care of them and stuff. She couldn't have children of her own. And that was a, you know, that from my understanding was very emotional for her. And so that was why she would often interact with local kids instead. And so I kind of feel like that's maybe part of why that energy is there. I don't know. Just a theory.
Very interesting.
Well, my story is about Victor Goddard, who you guys might have heard of. Victor Goddard was a member of the British Royal Navy, the Royal Air Force. He served the Royal Navy from 1910 to 1918, the Royal Air Force from 1918 to 1951. So that's a lot of service. He retired as an air marshal, which is a 3-star officer rank in the Air Force. So that's pretty high up there. Much combat, battles, what was it? One, two. He was in the rest of the front of World War I, the Battle of Somme, the Battle of France, Southwest Pacific Theater, Guadalcanal, Solomon Islands Campaign, and Southeast Asian Theater for World War II. He was awarded the Knight Commander of the Order of the Bath, Commander of the Order of the British Empire, mentioned in two dispatches, and had the Navy Distinguished Service Medal from the United States, even. So this isn't just some unknown guy. We don't even just have a last name here. We have an actual person who's well-known. He's documented.
Yeah.
Well, Sir Victor Gaudel, by flying a plane in 1935, I want to get the story as best as I can, so I actually want to change a different page of him. As an RFA Ring Commander in 1935, he was on a flight from Edinburgh, Scotland, to his home base at Andover, England. Why flying between the two, he decided to take the route from Drem, Scotland, which would actually fly over a dilapidated airfield. That was a World War I airfield that had become a farm. It was overgrown, foliage every place, not a place you would land. He got caught up in a storm, had to go up high, and came back down. So it was very bright and sunny, but everything had changed. The hangars were no longer falling apart. They were brand new. The airbase actually looked like an airbase again. There's four airplanes on the ground that were painted yellow in color, as well as he saw mechanics and a monoplane. Now, this is all very important. Planes were painted yellow in color by the RAF in 1935. There were no monoplanes in the RAF yet in 1935. And he said the mechanics he saw on the ground were wearing blue uniforms, which were not uniforms in 1935. So he's very confused. However, though, in 1939, Gaudel kind of freaked out by flying by Drem again, because guess what? In 1939, they wore yellow airplanes. They did have monoplanes, and the mechanics now did wear blue instead of brown. So what's thought by Gaudel spent the rest of his life, as did others believe in, for whatever reason, during that storm, he briefly spent time 4 years in the future on the exact spot he was at.
That's interesting.
And this was a well-documented case. People knew about it. He never hit it. I know that's a very short one. Sorry. But I saw it very interesting. No, don't
be sorry. That's interesting.
He thought he saw the future, and the stuff he saw wasn't in practice or existence yet for what he was doing. And everything he saw did become true. And I'm trying to find proof for sure that he talked about it before 1939. Mm-hmm. I cannot find that for sure, but the way the stories are told on multiple websites, that is how it happened. Because he didn't know if he time traveled or he caught a possible clairvoyant episode.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's.
It was not published, though, until 1951, so that is important.
By him or by somebody else?
The Saturday Evening Post, May 26, 1951. And there's a 1955 film called The Night My Number Came Up, which they changed stuff, but it's based on that.
Interesting. I wonder if he delayed publication because he didn't. Until he was, done in the service or something.
Well, he actually, he retired from the military in 51, became a principal for College of Aeronautics, to 54. He was going to a St. George's School, a Harpenian, and a Bryanston School. Now, I think St. George's School is a very prestigious school, if I had the right one. But there's no link to it right here, so I can't be sure. He was president of the Airship Association from 1975 to 1984. He helped encourage the beginning of the Wecken Trust in 71, which was a trust for spiritual education. That's the major thing of his retirement. He stopped believing in ghosts at that point. He spent years investigating the lecture on flying saucers. On May 3rd, 1969, he gave a talk on UFOs at Caxton Hall, London, which he defended the paraphysical hypothesis. He argued for extrasensory perception. And he had a book called Flight Towards Reality in 1975. And he also wrote Muir Down's autobiography for, and and the one for Alan Baum's book, Strange Relay, in 1984. So this isn't just a one-shot man.
Right.
This seems to have changed him. Definitely. Once he was out of the actual military, all the stuff immediately became a focus of his life.
That's interesting. Because I'm sure, while he's there, he probably more than likely felt like he couldn't focus on that, because there's such a stigma around it, especially in the military, or at least, extrasensory stuff, I guess I should say.
I want to apologize. I made a mistake. That's the story in the Saturday Evening Post and the movie that might come up all about a different incident of his. Apparently, there's a second incident of him. In 1946, in China, while at a party in Shanghai, he was another officer said he had a dream that Gaudel was to fly to Tokyo that night, and Gaudel was killed in the plane crash, because the plane, of course, crashed. Well, Gaudel ended up actually having to go to Tokyo that night and carry other people with him. The plane did crash, but nobody was injured.
Oh.
But it happened just like in the dream.
Interesting.
So twice in his life, once he had the clairvoyance or the time travel, next time someone else did, but directly affected him.
Interesting.
Sorry for that confusion on that one. Oh, I was actually looking up more stuff on the first story, trying to find any publication news. And I wasn't even looking for a second story. So yeah, I kind of find him interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know how you guys felt about him. I felt more comfy on his because we have so much more info on
the individual.
You couldn't hide behind anonymity. Yeah, I can't say that.
I kind of want to like look into him some more, like look into his life and stuff. That's interesting.
I agree. In his books.
Hmm.
Now, don't you guys have personal stories?
Hmm.
We do. Todd, do you want?
We do.
Do you want to go first? You want me to?
Sure, I'll go first. So this would have happened just a few years ago. I want to say it was about halfway through 2018. I was living in an apartment right across the river from Huntington in a little place called Proctorville, Ohio. And I was working out of an office in Barboursville, West Virginia, which is just a little ways down the road from Huntington. Kind of a little, I wouldn't quite call it a suburb, just a small satellite town, I guess. So anyway, you know, I've been working here for probably about 3 years at this point. So, you know, the commute to work was extremely familiar to me. And there's really two ways to go. And you can either like drive through town, which takes roughly about 45 minutes, you know, give or take a little bit, depending on traffic. And the other way is to get on the highway, and that shaves about 15 minutes off of the commute, depending on traffic, you know. And like I said, I'd been doing this for quite a while at this point. I was very used to it. So the day this happened, it was right about 4 o'clock. I was done with work, and right next door to our office, there was a Kroger. And so I'd been texting my wife, and I needed to go grab a few things from Kroger, and I can't remember exactly why, but there, for some reason, I was wanting to get back home fairly quickly. So I went over to the Kroger, went in, found my stuff, and I get back out to the car, and I look at the clock in the car, and it's like 4:30, and I took out my phone. I text my wife and tell her, you know, hey, I'm leaving. I should be home right about this time. And I said, I'm going to take the highway so I can get there quicker, you know. And I think at that point, it was like 4:36. And, you know, I had the timestamp on the text, and the time in the car matched up. So I left, you know, never thought anything about it, but I left and drove home. Nothing weird happened. It was a completely normal drive home. Took the highway, and I get there and it pulled in the parking lot for the apartments and parked the car. Look at the clock to see what time it was and like how much time I had. Again, I can't remember exactly what it was that was pressing me, but so anyway, I'm parked in the parking lot. I look at the clock. And it says 4:42 exactly, you know, 6 minutes later. And I'm like, well, that can't be right. So I pull up my phone and look at it, and it says the exact same thing. So then I kind of start freaking out, and I grab all my stuff, hurry up, go into the apartment and ask my wife, like, hey, what time is it? You know, and she gives me this weird look, tells me, and I'm looking at like all the clocks in the apartment, all of them. They might've been a minute or two off, but essentially I had somehow made that entire trip in 6 minutes. I have absolutely no idea how that happened. It really freaked me out at the time. Like I said, I was running around the apartment, looking at all the clocks, trying to figure out like what happened. I have zero explanation. Like I said, the drive was normal. There was nothing at all that weird happened during the drive, but somehow I made that 30-minute trip in 6 minutes.
That's crazy.
So I don't know if you'd call that a time slip or just like a loss of time. I don't know, but yeah, it definitely happened.
Interesting how these are, or at least, you know, my story is too. And some of the ones we read are, there's cars involved in some way, you know,
I think that's interesting.
Yeah, maybe drove through one universe into another. I don't know.
Do you think our families are missing us in the universe we came from?
My family doesn't miss me in the universe I'm in. So.
Mine doesn't either, Bill. It's okay. All right. Well, speaking of families, I have kind of a similar story to Todd's. It happened this past winter, actually, not all that long ago. Well, not this past winter. We're in winter right now. So 2021. I think it was like February or March. Anyways, I will note that it had been snowing, and feel free, you know, to ask any questions as I like go through this. But
how much snow did you get?
A couple inches. It was actually snowing while I went, because that was when I made it home. That was one of the things that freaked me out, was I hadn't been driving very fast. But I digress. Let me start from the beginning.
Yes, please digress.
I was at my brother's house. My brother's house is, depending upon how fast you drive, it's like an hour and 15 from my mom's house, which is where I was staying at the time. And I had been at his house. I left there around 8:30. I got to the next town that's about 7 or 8 miles from his, and it was a little about 8:40. And I registered that because I stopped to get a drink. And I, it was not an alcoholic drink. I keep, you know, get back on the road. I take this little shortcut, and this is, I feel like I should maybe mention this part too, because I know I've told you guys about it in the past, and it was really odd. And this is where like the oddness of the story begins. But, This little shortcut cuts off like a few miles. It is like an old farm road, and it connects like a couple farms to a more main road, I guess. I come up to where I turn to get back on the more main road, and as I'm turning, my lights hit on a cat in the cornfield, and the cat looked odd. Like it was bigger than the cats I normally see there. Its tail was really long and bushy. Its face was kind of weird. And the thing that was really odd was that it stopped. And usually when I see cats in that area, they just run. And my lights hit it, it stopped. And I just kind of looked at it for a second. And then there's a stop sign. Once I kept going, the cat kept walking the opposite direction. And the cat's face was weird. Like, I distinctly remember the eyes, but I couldn't discern any other features. And my lights were right on it. But I make my turn. I'm going like 50, 55. It is snowing. And then an owl flies in front of my car. And I come to almost a complete stop, so I don't hit it. And then I see like some deer. They cross the road, and I slow down for them. So I know I'm going like 45, 50 because of the snow and all the animals. And the next thing I know, it's 9 o'clock, and I am in the town that's like 5 miles from Beardstown. And this trip normally takes an hour. It definitely would have taken me an hour and 20 minutes at the speed I was going. And it took me 30 minutes. And I remember when I got home, I specifically waited until 9 to text my brother that I, or until 9:30 to text my brother to tell him that I got home, because I knew he would be mad at me if he thought I had sped the whole way home. And I have like some text messages from a friend. I texted a friend as I was like getting my drink, and I texted her when I hit the town closest to Beardstown, because I was like, what just happened to me? Cause she shares like weird stuff with me all the time, and I knew she wouldn't think I was weird. But I was totally weirded out by it, and those text messages are 25 minutes apart, and I don't know. And like, that's the thing too. I don't really, like I said, after I saw the two sets of deer, it was like all of a sudden I was in Frederick and I was just like, what? How did I get here so fast? So I don't know. That's my story. I'm still kind of weirded out by it. And I'm still like, wow, always wondering,
yeah,
if there's a plausible explanation to it.
Right. Yeah. I know what you mean there. Like I still can't wrap my head around like what happened to me. And it's like, I don't get it. You know, it's like,
yes,
it just doesn't make sense. You know, in any sort of way I try to put it together, it's like, that just doesn't make sense. I like the fact that you had like some other strangeness going on with like a weird cat and the owl, which, you know, owls are very, very much noted in paranormal mythologies around the world, really. And
I texted my friend about the cat too, actually, because it was so weird. It was just so weird because there's lots of stray cats right there, because there's a couple farms right there together. It's barn cats. They're chasing mice in the field. I know what they look like. They're almost always calicos. And this one was like grayish white and weird and big. Like most of the cats I see there are not big cats. And I don't know, man.
You know, it would have been a lot funnier, my jokes, if I would not have been on mute.
They would have been a lot funnier.
Jokes on you, Uncle. Jokes on you, Uncle Billy Toe Shoes. Cool. Sorry, Bill. Love you, buddy.
You're being a hot asshole. Doesn't run.
We love you, Uncle Billy.
Uncle Billy's been my nickname in too many aspects of my life.
Oh, God.
It's been a nickname even at my job. Now, when you said the owl, I went, who?
That would have been a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We missed out.
Not a Hera reference, because I was an idiot earlier. Hera's a peacock.
You're not an idiot.
If you don't understand that means you guys suck and you did not listen to our last episode.
So now you need to go
please
back.
Please jump
and
off a bridge or listen to the last episode. Either one's fine.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a little harsh. Uncle Billy.
Are your toe shoes too tight today?
I haven't worn toe shoes in years. Oh, Jamie.
If there are any toe shoe companies that want to sponsor us.
Are there any toe shoe companies still in
existence? Yeah, yeah.
Vibrams still exist.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen them for a while.
You can still get Vibrams.
Okay. I was going to say, I used to have a couple of buddies that would wear them fairly frequently, but I couldn't tell you these days.
I love hiking in them when I have them.
I never had a pair. Now I feel like I need to get a pair so we can start a club or something.
The Toe Shoes podcast.
if we ever do investigations together, we have to wear toe shoes during the investigation.
Now, one other time slip I don't want to cover today, but if people like, I think it would deserve its own episode.
Uh-huh.
It's a little case you might have heard of once or twice called Barney and Betty Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that yeah.
Episode.
Yes, that definitely would deserve its own episode. But I thought
based
on the time slips you mentioned today.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, right. Yeah, that's definitely a notable case.
They acknowledged a couple of them, didn't they? Within their
only one I can think of offhand. Oh, okay. But the fact is, even offhand, that's the one I keep thinking of.
Right.
That one and the Victor Goddard case always stick out to me.
I feel like in like there's some mention like later on from some of their like hypnotism experiences that they had some time slips later, or at least lost time later too.
Some of it, Jamie, Vibrams still do exist.
Yeah.
I know. Uncle Billy Toeshoes to will ride again.
Yes. Yes.
Can we write to them and ask if they'll embroider Uncle Billy on top of them?
Okay, have you seen their Japanese toe shoes?
No.
It's just 1 foot. It's like someone in a toe shoe and a regular shoe. They even have boot toe boots.
Oh, the furoshikis?
Yes.
I love that we're looking at this while we're together.
Online. Vibram, why aren't you sponsoring us?
Yeah.
I think I went for furoshikis.
I just want another pair of toe shoes.
How do you measure them? I forget. Hey. Sarah, I'm going to get you back for all this, by the way. Might be poison, but I'm going to get you back.
Don't do that.
All is fair in love, war, and family. I can't believe she told you guys.
She didn't tell me. She told Jamie. That's
much better.
I just sit back and enjoy.
I'm still going to get her back.
Well, that was another great episode, guys. Do you have any shout outs?
Monster Bob and Etsy.
Yep. Use code.
I didn't forget for once.
Strange for 10% off your order of sweet decals. And I think she has a jewelry tray on there now. That's super cute. So you've got options.
You can put your poor necklace on there.
Wow.
Kingsman's cast.
Wow.
Live on Twitch. Well, as many of those as you get on a weekly basis.
Oh, God. Yeah. Ew. Wow. Shout out to Vibram.
Suffocating Podcast, Mindframe. Vibram, please sponsor us. As long as it consists of a family.
Yeah, yeah.
They make Vibram boots now. They make like Vibram like UGG boots. Ooh, for ladies.
This has just turned into a Vibram commercial, I think.
Yes.
Follow us for more.
They have Vibram high top. Oh.
For more Vibram suggestions.
Yes.
Sorry, guys. I want a pair of these, though.
It's okay, Uncle Billy Toe Shoes. We know.
Fuck off.
All right, guys.
Visit your life. I mean, what?
Follow us on all the social medias, especially on the Facebook group. That's where most everything is happening. That's where the cool kids hang out, share memes and stuff. Please send us any personal stories. We would love to hear from you guys or anything else you want to share from us. You can reach out on Facebook, or we have a email you can reach us at strangerhappeningspod@gmail.com.
We have a Twitter.
Thank you, Jamie.
We do have a Twitter, but
I have a Cloaca.
I check the Twitter. I actually do.
Oh.
You check my cloaca?
Bill doesn't, but I do.
I'm going to have a toe shoe down here.
Cloaca.
Oh. I'll be a cloaca, I guess. Sarah, I'm going to get you back. Oh, you know what? When we hang up, I'm going to call my nephew and ask him if his mom took him to GameStop yet today.
Oh. That's playing dirty.
Anyone who knows by me knows by now I go for the throat.
Yes, this is true.
Or Todd's cloaca.
Or Todd's cloaca.
It's written on your hand. Yeah. Yes.
How was he referencing that? Oh, that's funny. Watch as we fall apart. Thanks for being here for our last episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like to say we like to go out on top, but we never reach the top. We're like a pyramid. We're going out at the base.
Yeah.
Now we actually have our next topic mostly planned, and we might even record it this week.
Yeah.
If I'm not in jail for harming my sister.
Yeah, you'll get a couple episodes quick from us, and then hopefully we'll get back on it. And we'll need
overtime, because I think I'm going to order some Vibram shoes.
Regular schedule.
I'm not even joking.
Vibram, send Bill some toe shoes, please.
Please, I used to have 6 pairs.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not even joking. No, I have a shoe addiction.
And why are you mad at us for calling you Uncle Billy Toe Shoes? You're the one that had 6 pairs.
Oh, there's a reason. There is a reason. I will tell you after we're off the air why I don't like that nickname. And you'd be like, God. Oh, I'm sorry. And trust me. Yeah, I do have a shoe addiction, though. I probably have like 4 or 5 pairs of Adidas right now. A pair of Salomons. At least probably 6 pairs of Adidas, 2 pairs of Skechers, maybe 3 pairs of Skechers.
Oh, you do have a shoe addiction.
I do. I don't think I do. You know,
I have one trusty pair that I just bought a replacement of because they're starting to rip out. All right, guys.
Adios.
All right.
Ciao.
I'll feed his aim.
All sound effects and music supplied by Zapsplat.com. You can find the link in our show notes. Check them out. They got some cool stuff going on. And thank you guys for another great episode. I had a lot of fun with this one.
So did I.
And keep it strange, y'all.
Adios. Ciao.
Auf Wiedersehen.